There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey fam, this is Android Faithful, your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps in the world of Android through snow, through summer, through the moon passing between the sun and the earth in either a partial or total eclipse. We are here to bring you the Android news. I am back and I'm Win Twit now.
And I'm Jason Howell. Save the cheerleaders, save the world.
And I'm Michelle Rahman.
Sorry, isn't that the, that's the Heroes
That's Heroes,
reference,
yeah, that's
right?
Heroes. That was a great reference. That was awesome.
And that had something to do with the eclipse. I forgot about that show until yesterday when suddenly I saw Save the Cheerleader, Save the World, and other like Heroes clips and everything. I was like, well, you know what? The first season of that show is pretty darn good. So, you know, at least there's that to remember from the solar eclipse.
I didn't actually watch much of that show. I just know it from cultural osmosis. So,
okay. Yeah, I would say from my own experience, the first season was excellent, and then everything that came after that was pretty disappointing by comparison. So there you go. There's my 10-second review.
Well, it appears from cultural osmosis, from my cultural osmosis learning, that the solar eclipse, especially a total one, brings amazing things, and we have an amazing thing or amazing person on this show for the first time to the show, to Android Faithful. Please welcome 9to5 Google's Ben Shoon. Hey, Ben.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Hey, oh, that was a really good applause noise, Jason.
Thank you.
That wasn't the board, that was you.
Like that.
Oh, that's great.
It's weird that I practice things like that, but I do. Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Great to see you, man. Good to have you here. We've had you as a guest a number of times on All About Android, but of course, this is a different show entirely, even though it's kind of the same and kind of different. So it's good to have you back. Thank you for being on tonight.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
And, well, sorry.
And our listeners can't see, but a lot of our rundown is dominated by Ben here, who is a prolific writer, very prolific writer.
Yeah, no kidding.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's take a moment and reflect on this. What is your most prolific week? Like, I imagine as like a writer on a site like 9to5 Google, where there is constantly news and you're constantly writing articles to kind of keep up with the news, you probably have some sense of like the week from hell or from heaven, depending on how you look at it. Is there a week to where you were like, there's that like pinnacle week that I wrote 50 articles?
Oh, so my record for a day is 38.
Are you kidding me?
A day?
Which is Google I.O.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
How many of those were pre-drafted versus like written on the day of? Because 38 is insane.
That was insane. 9 a.m. to 1 in the morning.
Oh, my.
My God.
Google I.O. is the busiest of the days. I would say Pixel launch at the end of the year is the busiest week.
Dang. Wow. That's impressive. Impressive that you can come up with that many articles and have them all say different things and not repeat yourself along the way. That would be my problem. I wouldn't realize that I already said that in a different article and people would yell at me for it. Anyways, I'm super impressed.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Half the time when I'm doing show prep, it's like between you, Ben, and Michelle, it's like, okay, now what's Ben got to say? What's Ben going to say? What's Michelle going to say? And also Abner over at 9to5 Google, too. Just like, I feel like...
Oh, absolutely.
Without sounding too like parasocial or relationship, it's just like, oh, you're like, you guys are like my buddies when I'm doing prep for the show. It's so nice. So I actually was really excited to actually be back in time to have my first show with you, Ben. So this is really cool.
I'm excited to be on with you as well.
Well, Well, it's hard for audio stream listeners to see, but I wish you could hear some way. The Fabulous Shirt Game that most of us, sorry, Jason, have. Ben has an excellent shirt on as well, very Android theme specific, the Android astronaut. Michelle and I are a little bit more on brand because we are wearing the new Android Faithful merch. That's right, we have merch now. We have a Threadless store where you can get t-shirts, and not just like the usual t-shirts. We got like V-necks and crew necks and long sleeve t-shirts. We got jackets. Did y'all know we have rugs as well?
We got tanks.
We got everything, y'all. So if you want to get your hands on the Android Faithful Frequency t-shirt, head over to, what's the URL, Jason? My tired eyes.
It is Threadless. Hold on. I'm trying to find
the thing. Threadless.com.
Threadless.com. There we go. Android Faithful.threadless.com.
And get you an Android Faithful Frequency t-shirt. Ron has been really sweet to say that I designed it. That's only very partially true. It's based on our logo, but I also like to say that Jason partly designed it because it is the frequency waveform from our wonderful theme song. And actually, I think it's probably one of that really, kick ass, like dance, beat. Pretty sure that on the left side is
side is a kick drum probably.
Yeah, it is. It probably is because it was the most interesting part of the waveform. So anyway, if you want a little piece of us on you or on your floor, if you get a rug, head on over to androidfaithful.threadless.com. And yes, we have no Ron today, but our own Ron Richards. If you miss him and you want to catch up with him, he was actually on this channel, on the stream earlier today on the Daily Tech News Show, talking about Android stuff. Maybe a few things we'll be talking about later. So yeah, if you miss you some Ron, and especially if you haven't checked out Daily Tech News Show, who is our lovely, host network, go check him out on YouTube or on Twitch or on your favorite podcatcher.
He was talking about something on that show, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, but not quite yet. The Find My Device Network, which has become a very recurring theme on this show. Before we get to that, though, let's talk about the most important news, I think, which is that yesterday there was an eclipse. And what does that even have to do with Android? Well, I noticed, and partially because I participated, and so did you, Ben, and so did you, Michelle, and everyone else that had a phone, attempted to take a photo of the eclipse wherever they happened to be. And, I saw some pretty darn good shots. And actually, Michelle, you took some of these shots from using your S24 Ultra. And that's right. I'll just kind of thumb through these. But, yeah, you got some. I mean, that's pretty sick right there. If you're watching the video version, you can see these.
Yeah, the clouds make it look a little ominous. I really like that shot in particular.
Yeah. And was this just with the pro mode setting or how
No,
did
this
you
is just straight off of just the regular camera mode, handheld, no stabilizer or gimbal. It was very challenging because, when you're at 100x zoom in particular, any little movement will move the sun out of frame. So I had to spend a lot of time getting it perfect. And I wish I had a proper tripod setup, but I was kind of worried with my MacGyvered setup initially. I was worried my phone would fall out of the little tripod that I had, so I didn't want to risk it. So I just tried it all handheld. It turned out pretty okay.
Ooh,
there's a lot of photos. I saw some really professional photos that were way better, but out of all the smartphone camera photos that I saw, it seems like people were most impressed by those taken by the S24 Ultra. And, I think that kind of goes to show that the zoom telephoto lens they pack in this phone is really impressive. I can't speak for all the other camera aspects. People still note that the shutter lag is there. But when it comes to zoom, the Ultra is still king, in my opinion.
And Ben, you took some shots as well. Which it looks like you got some solar glasses from Google. I didn't know that they had those.
So those are from 2017.
Oh, I got those, okay.
At the Android REO launch event, which took place during the last eclipse.
No kidding. How's that and for I still a little had history?
Them, yeah, I still have them sitting them. Around along with some of the Oreos. Which are definitely not edible at this point.
Actually, they probably are. That's the weird
it's
thing.
True.
They probably are edible. And so what did you take your shots that you took?
That was with a Pixel 8 Pro.
Pixel 8 Pro and doing like a digital zoom on the the moon or on the sun and moon, I suppose. Yeah. Ooh, this one actually looks really good with all the cloud.
Yeah. Color. I forgot to post some of the better ones. I took some more as it got closer to, I think we had like 80 something percent here.
Okay.
But yeah, that looks, I forgot to post those.
Cool. Yeah. I, used the S24 Ultra as well. And I didn't, you know, it didn't even occur to me to do the space zoom when it was happening, which is, I think it's kind of fine because I always find the space zoom, like it's neat that it gets that close, but then you get that weird kind of like watery artifacty thing going on. And I don't know, sometimes it's just not that pleasing. So I ended up doing the 10X zoom with the glasses over the lens. And I mean, this is as much of an eclipse as we got where I'm at in Petaluma, California, but you know, that's a reasonably sharp looking photo.
It's crisp.
I mean, I could. Yeah,
I think one of the really cool things about the 100x zoom, like the thing that only that could do is you could extract some detail about the solar activity because, like, you know, during the eclipse, you can actually see like a lot of the solar activity going on. That was like if you go back to the photos that I shared, there's like a bunch of red spots and like red bands around some of the photos.
True.
Yeah, that's
I called it a flaming Oreo, and like that's indication of solar activity.
That like this is probably my favorite of the shots that you did. This it's
I don't think
very,
I
like
I, that was someone
symmetrically
else
aligned
that, actually.
Oh, that's not yours.
Yeah, yeah. No. Oh, the second that, reply has someone.
Oh, but dang it. Oh, okay, still that's pretty neat. Okay,
but that person also used an S24 Ultra according to them.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah.
See, you can get a lot of cool.
Like
oh,
that,
I
the
see
red
what you
band
mean.
On the bottom.
Oh, that's really neat.
So was it just luck in 2017 that they were releasing Android Oreo and? That the sun made a flaming Oreo. Is this just it's just by luck that we're celebrating Oreo again? By
totally forgot about that.
That's amazing.
That is what a marketing moment. Yeah, you're right. This is a photo from a different person. Well, that person just got a compliment too. Cool stuff. All right. Well, that's what the Galaxy S24 and the Pixel 8 Pro can do for the next eclipse. Which when does that happen? How many decades
in the US? It's like 21 years from now.
Yeah.
So what phones will we be using there? Will Android and iOS be two things or one in 21 years? I don't know. Anything could happen.
Neural interfaces right in our brain. Singularity, something like my butt's somewhere in there. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Sounds about right. All right, Michelle, you've been doing the work. You've been putting in the hours on Android 15. And there's more to talk about. What you got?
So there's a whole bunch of things to talk about, starting with a new potential feature called Adaptive Timeout. So if you use your phone right now, there's a lot of different screen options that you can do to control when your phone screen automatically times out. There's a display timeout function, which basically it times out your screen. If you set it for like 5 minutes and you don't touch the phone for 5 minutes, it'll time out. And then on the Pixel, at least, there's an option to extend that timeout automatically so long as you're actively looking at your phone. That's called, I think, I forgot what it's called on the Pixel. But that feature was introduced with the Pixel 4. And now it looks like Google might be introducing a feature that basically does the opposite of that, where if you're not actively using your phone, it'll time out your screen early so that, you know, it's you're not accidentally leaving your phone out to the side for like 30 minutes because you have a screen timeout of 30 minutes and then someone else picks up your phone and starts using it. This feature, Adaptive Timeout, will somehow detect that you're not using your phone, probably through like some proximity sensor or potentially the camera as well.
The camera,
and then decide if you're not using your phone, it'll lock your screen early and then lock your phone early so that, you know, you have to unlock it again to actively use it. So it's a minor security change. It might help you if you like to leave your screen timeout to a longer period. I personally like to do that. Like I leave my screen timeout at like 15 minutes because I always check it and like have to test something. And then I hate having to constantly unlock it. And it's like on a desk, usually my phone. So it's not in front of my face. So I don't have it like checking my face to keep it awake. So this feature would basically let me have it on my table for 15 minutes. But like when I'm not using it, after a period of time, it would just automatically lock itself. So
yeah, I end up having my screen timeout. Like if I'm reviewing a device, then I set it very long because same thing. It's super annoying to like continue to have to unlock my phone and everything. But when I'm kind of like past that point and I'm just using a device the way I want to use it, I usually set it for a minute, which I feel like is kind of like the best of both worlds. It's not so short that I'm constantly like, you know, fighting it. And it's not so long that I'm draining battery at that point. I mean, I am more than I would be at 15 seconds, but yeah.
The next feature is something that I've talked about before. It's called Private Space. This creates a separate user profile on your device, and it lets you install apps onto that device. So if you've ever used a Samsung phone before, you may have heard of a feature called Secure Folder. Private Space in Android 15 basically does the same thing, although it probably it works differently under the hood. You create a new profile. You sign in if you want to with a Google account, or you create a new one, which Google recommends. And then that Google account you can use to download apps, and all the data and history is kept separate if you made a new one. And all the apps that you download onto that private space are kept hidden from the main profile whenever it's locked. I think the more interesting article actually, Jason, to show is the next one, which is actually a full hands-on demonstration of the feature in question. I did a video for Android Authority showing the feature running on my Pixel 8 Pro, and it's a 5-minute video. It goes through the setup process and then actually shows the feature in question. You can optionally create an entirely new screen lock, as Jason is showing on screen right now, or you can just use your existing screen lock. You can install whatever apps you want to this private space. You can choose whether or not the private space automatically locks whenever you lock your device. And there's a whole bunch of other features and changes that Google has made. Like, there's an indicator in the status bar that tells you when you're using an app that's in the private space so that you know to not accidentally cross, you know, reference information, leaking your own data into the main profile. This feature is basically like, it basically takes Android's existing profiles feature and just extends it to allow you to hide apps from the main profile user whenever you want to. Like, a lot of users have been doing something similar with the work profile. They've been using third-party apps to create like a work profile they can install apps onto and then lock that profile. But like, work profile is not really meant for that purpose. It's kind of like a hacky solution to be able to clone apps and like make like a separate profile. But this is like a built-in native version of those kind of app hiders or like work profile solutions. And basically, what if you've ever wanted to see a secure folder like solution on stock Android or on a Pixel phone, this looks like it's going to be just that. And it's not available yet. I had to activate it manually to record this video, and it looks like it's mostly working. There were still, I think there was still one placeholder asset during the setup, but it looks like it's mostly functional. There might be some bugs that you encounter.
It changes the app drawer down below so that it kind of splits them into two sections. Is that what I'm noticing there? That like the bottom.
So there's a separate
third
section
ends up
at the
being
bottom.
A private space.
There's a separate section at the bottom of the Pixel launcher called private where it's located. And you can also choose to hide that entirely so that that section doesn't appear at all. So nobody else knows that you have a private space set up. And then if you do choose to hide that private space, you have to actively search in the Pixel launcher search bar for private space. And then you can launch it and it'll show up at the bottom. But nice. Yeah.
Okay. Borrowing or taking over of features from other phones, like Samsung's had this sort of feature. We've seen this on a lot of other devices where they've integrated this and coming as like a native feature into Android 15. Not bad. It's kind of about time. I think this sort of thing has been around for a long time.
And the next feature is something that I think got a lot of people upset for, I think, the wrong reason, even though I learned later this is apparently something that iOS has already done for a long time. And it's that when you disable Bluetooth, Android will now show an option to automatically turn it back on the next day. So, like, a story we'll talk about later today, as Jason alluded to, is the launch of the Find My Device network. Well, that network really relies on people having Bluetooth enabled so that you can, you know, send beacons, you can receive beacons from nearby devices so that you can contribute the aggregated location of devices on the network. But if everyone has Bluetooth turned off, then the network is kind of useless because you don't have anything contributing to the network's all the location data that it needs. So Android 15, instead of, you know, allowing users to permanently turn off Bluetooth, and, you know, like letting them just leave it off for days without ever contributing to the Find My Device network or have enjoying features like Quick Share, will now introduce a new toggle in the Bluetooth settings page and the Quick Settings panel that allows you to turn on automatically turning on Bluetooth the next day. So like when you turn off Bluetooth, there'll be a toggle that says automatically turn on tomorrow. And then if you choose to leave that toggle enabled, the next day Bluetooth will turn on by itself so that you don't have to remember to turn it on. So this could be useful if you're like, you know, you need to turn off Bluetooth because there's some interference going on. You want someone else to connect to some device you're using, or you just want to save some minuscule amount of battery for some reason, even though Bluetooth barely takes any battery at all these days. This feature will let you temporarily pause your Bluetooth use and then have it automatically be turned on the next day.
Nice. And so if I didn't have the Bluetooth scanning thing toggled, then it would operate the way it does now. Like I could turn off Bluetooth in my settings and it would stay off indefinitely. Is that right?
Well, Bluetooth scanning is, yeah, you can, from what I know, you should be able to still turn off Bluetooth entirely. You should be able to ignore the automatically turn on toggle and just
got it. Okay.
Turn off Bluetooth if you want to. This is just an option that Google is now like putting in front of users so that, you know, they know that they can pause instead of permanently disable the Bluetooth radio.
I mean, super important for the integrity of the Find My Device thing, which we will talk about very soon.
If I can jump in.
Yeah, it's nice, please.
It works that way because on iOS, it's actually very different. I was checking on my iPhone. If you turn off Bluetooth from the quick settings, it just automatically goes to, it'll turn back on tomorrow. There's no option. But if you turn it off from in the settings menu, there's no message about it not turning off for the day. Like it'll just stay off at that point. So it's nice to be able to have like a button that specifically says that.
So it's different behavior whether you do it from the quick settings versus the actual settings.
Yeah, I don't think you can really see it. But yeah, if you turn it off from the Bluetooth menu, there's a little message that shows up that says it's going to turn it off until tomorrow. And then if you turn it off from in the actual settings menu, it just turns off.
Okay. And actually, the more I think about that, I can understand that, right? Like if you're doing that through the quick settings, maybe it's more likely that you're doing it on a temporary basis because you're getting to it quick versus diving into the settings, which you would only really do if that was the only result or if, you know, potentially if you wanted to turn it off long term, I guess. But yeah, that sort of makes sense to me.
Kind of like a pro. I mean, I guess it's more like if you're a pro and you know what you're doing and you're specifically wanting to do it, then you don't have to worry about the OS preempting your decision to turn off your Bluetooth, dang it. But obviously, yeah, for most times or for most people, maybe that's overkill, not necessary. So I like that though. It's both, I don't always both is good, like the easy and then like the specific or the auto and the specific. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah. Sweet.
And the last change that I wanted to highlight is basically a follow-up on the revamped desktop mode experience that I've been tracking since late 2022. So for those of you who don't know, Android 10, Android has had a built-in desktop mode launcher. It's incredibly bare bones. All it has is like a single app drawer that you can launch apps in, and it's only meant for developers to test what their apps look like on multi-display experiences. But since late 2022, Google has been working to revamp this experience so that it's actually more usable, kind of like Samsung DeX on Samsung devices or Motorola's Ready 4. And a lot of the work that Google has been doing in the background has focused on improving the windowing capabilities of Android apps. So like when you open a Android app in a floating window, what can you do with that window? For the longest time, you could basically just close it and that's it. But in recent builds of Android 14, Android 14 QPR3, and Android 15 Developer Preview 2, they've made a lot of improvements so that you now have the capability of snapping windows to the side, hovering over the maximize button, and having like these little window snap layouts. You can, you know, basically a lot of things that you see on desktop operating systems, Google is working to add to Android. And I recorded this video that Jason is showing off on the video feed right now that shows some of these windowing capabilities. Now, one thing I wanted to note is that launcher you see in the background, that's not actually part of the desktop experience I'm showing off. That's a third party, technically not third party. It's a Google developed app in AOSP that they use to test multi-display experiences. but it was handy for showing off this desktop mode, these windowing changes. And so what you should be focusing on is just me moving around this Firefox window, the Twitter window, maximizing, minimizing, you know, like expanding, snapping, all that stuff. That's what I'm showing off here. And a lot of improvements have been made, and a lot of improvements still need to be made for this to actually match DeX or even get close to desktop functionality. For example, you can't use keyboard shortcuts to snap windows, which I use all the time to like move windows around. The experience is kind of buggy for me. Like when I opened an app, it would like snap in from the bottom instead of like there's nothing on the bottom. I haven't seen any work at all being done on the actual taskbar at the bottom to make it more like a desktop operating system. There's just so much that looks like it needs to be done. So I'm kind of right now kind of doubting this might actually launch in Android 15. We might even see it in like the next release. It looks like this is still so unfinished, but we know that work is being done. This is something that Google is actually finally doing. You know, if you wanted to
finally
DeX like desktop
been
mode,
such a long road
in stock
to this
Android,
point.
Oh, they're finally working on it.
Yeah, I mean, literal years at this point. I remember, God, I think it was during the pandemic even, because I think I was upstairs playing around with some of the earlier seeds of this sort of thing hitting. And it was really, really early then and you know, completely unusable. But it was like, oh, okay, obviously there's something happening here. And here we are 4 years later, and we're still not quite there. It's interesting how some things don't, you know, make the fast track. They literally take that long to see the light of day.
Well, you know, sorry, go ahead, Michelle.
No, this is a little off topic, but like it kind of highlights one frustrating part about the Android OS is that a lot of the major features are dictated by basically how does Google see the importance of this feature, right? Yes. Like Samsung and other companies for years have pushed desktop mode like experiences, but because Google hasn't seen it as a priority, this whole feature has stagnated because there's not really much of an incentive for developers to, you know, build apps and experiences that work well on desktop modes because there's no like base solution for everyone to follow, right? Like over the years, that's changed, of course, because now we have, you know, Chrome OS. You're building apps for, you know, PCs. They're Google Play games with an emulator, and that's changed over time, right? But like, for a long time, the pace of development of desktop mode has been dictated by Google. And now that it's a priority, finally, hopefully, we'll see this explode in popularity, but it's going to take a few years.
Yeah.
That is a thing, though, that a lot of times, like, the things that we need in daily life just don't align. And I think, to give Google credit, they always try to make their best guess, or, you know, obviously they probably have their own OKRs, product roadmaps and things like that. And so that's kind of been a frustrating thing. And I have always said that, or I've said for many years that the good thing is that usually the Android team kind of reaches out to us and asks for feedback. Although sometimes that feedback is, hey, we're working on this thing. Do you guys want to use it? And then it's like crickets. So I'm kind of curious how this will be picked up, because that is a really good point, Michelle, that there's sometimes like a little bit of a discrepancy between what, for better or for worse, what a developer actually needs and what Google provides. And then sometimes it's always like the chicken and egg problem with everything else, like large screens, like other things that, you know, if no one's doing it, then if no developer's supporting it, then why does Google work on it? But then again, if Google's not working on it, then developers never could support it. So it's like at some point someone takes a shot and maybe they get lucky.
I'm curious, Ben, to know if you have a strong opinion on this. Have solutions like this, like if we were to take a look at the one that comes to mind, of course, is Samsung DeX. Have solutions like this proven themselves in the market at this point to be a valuable feature? I know that some people enjoy working in these, but this isn't a new thing. Google, of course, hasn't rolled it out into kind of the wider Android yet, and that would be new when they do that. But we've seen this for years. What's your take as far as like how much consumers, how much users actually want this sort of functionality?
I kind of have mixed feelings on it. I personally don't like, I get the appeal of, you know, plug your phone into a monitor and you have a computer, but I've never specifically wanted to do that because I've never had anything more powerful enough to do that. As things continue to shift, maybe that's more useful. The thing I find desktop mode most useful for is how Samsung does it on tablets, because you can run decks full screen. That is genuinely useful and had me strongly considering getting a Samsung tablet instead of a Pixel tablet. So I would love to see Google do the same thing with desktop mode. But yeah, like someone in chat just said, if I'm going to use a laptop, I'm just going to use an actual laptop because my phone's not going to do most of what my laptop is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Well, cool. That's the Android 15 roundup from Michal. And you may have even had more that we didn't talk about. I don't know. I feel like you're all over the map when it comes to what's coming through Android 15.
Oh, there's so. More. It's just, yesterday was all about the solar eclipse. So all the other articles that I want to write are been postponed for now.
You are forgiven, Michal.
You know what also happened yesterday, which I think also bears a lot of attention because speaking of things that have taken a while to see the light of day and talking about things that Michal has been digging into for a really long time. Yesterday was a big day because finally, Google rolled out the Find My Device network for Android. Michal, I know you're kind of preoccupied with the actual, wonderful natural phenomenon. How does it feel for the Find My Device network to finally be here? And what is it like? Does it look like what we hoped it would look like at this point? Question mark.
I think one of the most interesting bits about the announcement was how they're treating the default, the collection of location data. Like, they talk about it in their security blog, but instead of by default, where the location of a device is determined by at least one nearby device picking up the beacon that's being broadcasted, in order for a device's location to be reported, there has to be at least multiple devices picking it up and then reporting it. Like, they call it aggregated location reporting. And Google says that allows, or that mitigates the potential for someone to, plant a tracker on someone, and then that person unknowingly takes that tracker back to their house, and then you can figure out where they live. Well, this feature requires, if you're only having one or two devices and you have your location set in your Google account, right? So your location tracking can be ignored entirely at your house. And if you only have one device that's reporting the location of that tracker tag, then it won't be reported at all. So that's a really interesting approach that Google is taking to, their device tracking network versus Apple's, which is, I believe, only single device is required. And Google does have that as an option. You can enable the ability to have a device's location be reported if only one nearby device picks it up. But that's not the default. Google is going with the multi-device approach as the default. And I think that's really interesting.
And a lot of tracker hardware to come, kind of tapping into this. Ben, do you think what's your opinion on the need for this kind of update to the Find My Device network? I know people have been definitely waiting for it for a long time. I think any sort of cross-platform support on technologies like this is a good thing. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is just Find My Device in general has been, it's useful functionality and it's been around for years, but this is really putting a spotlight on it and expanding it. And I know even just the other day, I was talking about this with my wife because she lost her phone in the house. and I was saying man, it's going to be really nice in a few days because, Nest devices also participate in this. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be able to find your phone in your house just by looking and saying, oh, it's near this Nest hub. So I can just go over there and look near there instead of searching the whole house because previously it just gave me an address. And the same with trackers. I think AirTags have really proven their worth, even though they have their privacy concerns. And while those networks existed before, I think Apple's network also kind of killed, independent networks, because why would you use an independent network when you can use one that's on everyone's phone? So I think this finally, gives Android users the ability to tap into a similarly sized network, arguably a bigger one once this is, fully global. I'm looking forward to it a lot. I've been really excited about this.
Yeah. It's been a long time coming. That's for sure.
And we'll see how it rolls out. For now, the Find My Device is tracking phones and tablets, but headphones are coming soon and there will be And as mentioned, the Android ecosystem of trackers coming, and there will be support for third-party trackers in Find My Device starting in May. And not only that, if you have a Pixel 8 or Pixel 8 Pro, you're going to get a little bit of something extra. And we've, I think we've mentioned this before, where tracking is even possible if you have a dead battery on specifically for now your Pixel 8 and Pixel 8 Pro because of specialized Pixel hardware. Again, that special secret sauce that Pixel have, but hopefully that will be, you know, kind of, you know, propagated out to other devices. But yeah, go ahead and check it out. I just downloaded mine today. The interface is a little bit different, a little more cleaned up than kind of like, you know, the previous device manager, thing like that. So yeah, it looked really easy to use, and it even picked up it, at least in my Find My Devices, it actually picks up a Bluetooth speaker that I have, or it lists a Bluetooth speaker that I have at my sister's house in Maryland. Yeah, it's all very nice and easy to use so far. I haven't lost anything just yet, but we'll see. The fact that, and like as you mentioned, Ben, as chat mentioned too, that the fact that the Nest devices participate is great, because it's just not helpful when you know that it's at your house and.
Yeah,
it could be anywhere in your house. So I'm not looking forward to losing my phone, but I look forward to using Find My Device for the cases in which I lost my phone. So, yep.
I wish this had happened a couple of months ago, because right about a month ago, I lost my wallet, and I've spent the entire month like refusing to accept that it's truly lost, because it makes no sense to me that I did lose it. Like, I've retraced my steps and everything. I'm like, God, it's just got to be here somewhere. Like, it's got to be here in the house. And I just have absolutely, like, maybe it fell in between some cushions somewhere. And I'm finally at the point to where I'm replacing all the credit cards and, aww, you know, other things that I lost and everything, which means I'm probably going to find it. But if this was here a couple of months ago, then I could, you know, potentially track it to wherever it actually is. So anyways, happy it's here later than
specialized ever. Pixel hardware, by the way, it's not really that special. It's just, it's a hard requirement. Like, what you have to have is just basically a line that's able to power the Bluetooth chip, mm-hmm, when the rest of the components are powered off, right? So if you can't give power to the Bluetooth chip, then it's not able to continue broadcasting those beacons that other nearby devices can pick up. And right now it looks like only the Pixel 8 and Pixel 8 Pro support that feature, because like they were manufactured with that in mind. Mm-hmm. And they also support that feature, like, you know, in the Bluetooth chip level. And unfortunately, it looks like at least for now, Google's older devices don't support that. Another L for Pixel Fold users, unfortunately.
Yeah, right.
I got my circle to search though, so...
Well, at least there's that.
I'm sorry, Pixel Fold users. But it's not my fault.
And I wonder if other manufacturers are going to start, you know, prioritizing this as an extra feature in their feature set as well.
I think Google did tell some publications that they are working with SoC vendors and OEMs to enable this powered off finding feature on their devices.
Yeah. Good. Great feature. Add that, y'all. Okay. Well, we have our weekly patron pick. Every week we give our patrons who support Android Faithful, patreon.com/AndroidFaithful, the opportunity to vote on their favorite of three stories. So we put up, you know, a poll with three stories to choose from, and we say, hey, which one do you want us to talk about on the show? And the winner, we do the discussion. Before all of that, though, we've been bringing in all of your AI-generated Android news graphics, images, and Joe Catskill sent this creation, which I'm having a hard time navigating, of the little Android guy basically, you know, reporting the news on what appears to be some sort of a podcast, a news podcast. So this could really be any one of us, if we're honest here. Joe, thank you for submitting this. Definitely a call to everyone who's listening, not just patrons, but if you want to send in your creations, you can send it into contact@androidfaithful.com. And then patrons, of course, were given the ability to vote between three stories. And I don't have the results here, but I know that Samsung Galaxy Watch 7 Pro tipped to have a larger battery. That did not win. Asus refunds Zenfone buyer for failing to provide bootloader unlock tools as promised. That didn't win. But what did win is this new gadget lets you run Samsung Dex on your car screen. Basically, this is a dongle, and yes, it is a Kickstarter. Take that, with a grain of salt. It's not something that like Samsung is creating, which I'm not surprised. Like, I don't know, something about this screams like bad idea to me, but it's called the Auto Pro X. It surpassed its $5,000 goal. It's now sitting, I checked before showtime, right around $100,000, 10 days to go on this. And it is a $199 puck style device that you plug into the car's USB port. And then on the phone, you tap the Dex option in Galaxy Quick Settings. And poof, you've got Dex appearing in your dash on a touchscreen, in-car monitor. So, I understand. I love putting things in all different places and seeing how it works and everything. Just don't do this while driving. Leave this to when you're parked. Don't be navigating your Samsung Dex while you're driving. I just think it's a horrible idea. But if you're parked, go for it. Go nuts. What do y'all think of this?
Man, do people love Dex?
I don't know. Do people
external?
Love
external? I feel like we have some very among the Android faithful fam. We have. Yeah, I know some of y'all just love or need that external display for your mobile devices. And I know this is just like another option, especially with every single major manufacturer is coming out with these new, much more smarter cars with bigger screens and everything. So I mean, what you gonna do with that big screen, right? So I personally wouldn't, just for my own safety. Man, I don't even feel like I sound like a fuddy-duddy. I'm just worried about everybody's safety right now.
Yeah.
Replay Jason's current previous PSA on not driving distracted. But there's obviously an appetite for it. $100,000, $102,000 worth of appetite at least. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. 684
Michelle,
people.
Anybody?
I feel like a lot of cars, I don't even know if this would work on that many cars, effectively, especially because so many cars that even have a screen have dials to touch them. They don't have touch screens, or they have resistive touch screens, which would be an absolute nightmare to have to navigate a smartphone interface with a resistive touch screen.
Thank you.
You'd need a really modern car, a really newer car to actually enjoy this. And even then, you can only really enjoy this when you're parked.
Yeah, or you should really only enjoy this while you're parked. I don't know. Maybe there's some controls in there for it to know if you're moving, and if so, then to deactivate it. But something tells me that might be disabled, possibly if that does exist. Like I know in our car, we do have a Tesla, and it has a YouTube app in the interface, but you can't do that app unless the car knows that you're parked, and not just stopped at a light, parked. There are ways to do these things safely, but interesting. Dex in the car, not something that I saw coming. Anyways, you wanted it, you got it. Thank you for your support, oh wonderful patrons. Patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. If you want to help support the show, you certainly can. We'd love to have you on board. And then you too can place your vote for some of the stories we talk about on this show. Anyways, patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. All right. Coming up next, we've got some hardware to talk about. Not a lot of hardware, but a little bit.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, this was actually something that we talked about from a rumor standpoint.
Yeah.
A handful of episodes, and now it's real. See, rumors do come true.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, like, as I keep calling them leaky peekies, what does a leaky peeky turn into? Like a mobile manifestation or something? Like the kids say, it manifested finally? I don't know. But yes. Mobile manifestation sounds like a poltergeist thing. I don't
know. Mobile manifestation.
Spooky phones. But this isn't spooky. This is the Motorola Edge 50 Pro, at least that's what it's called in India, where it has been released. We talked about this a few episodes ago, and this is their new, and we've been trying to figure out what to call the lower premium, upper mid range. And I think GSM Arena, they called it, what did they call it for? Oh, shoot.
They
wrote
called
down.
It.
They called it the premium upper mid range.
Premium upper mid range.
Premium upper mid range, which I don't know. For some reason, really amusing when I read it. I'm on 3 hours of sleep, so that's probably why. But I don't actually, now that I read it again, I don't know if it's that clear, but we'll call it the new premium upper mid range.
I'm trying to like do the premium trigonometry in my brain. The premium upper mid range.
So it is a premium device. And it's mid-range, but upper mid-range.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So it's official. It's out. And if you aren't on the video, if you aren't watching the video version of this podcast and you're audio only, this was the one that we talked about with the very kind of distinct, a little bit different back design, where the camera bump was kind of a very subtle, you know, raised bump that kind of flowed and sloped very subtly into the rest of the phone.
It's gentle.
Slope. And like the back material kind of flows in between the units on the camera bump. Very cute. You don't just have to kind of admire it on the internet. It is real, at least for now in India. It will be coming to the US, though probably under a different name and with slightly different specs. But what we can tell now is that, yes, this phone is real. It has a camera bump with four lenses. It's got a curved 6.7-inch POLED display that runs at 1220p resolution and a 144Hz refresh. It is rocking the Snapdragon 7 Gen 3 processor, 12 gigabytes of RAM, and 512 gigabytes of storage. So not that shabby at all. It's got a pretty healthy size battery at 4,500 milliamps, and it has a 125-watt proprietary wired charging and 50-watt wireless charging. And not only that, you actually get a wireless charging stand included with the phone, which is pretty
awesome.
That
never happens.
Yeah, so maybe that's the premium part of the premium upper end. Upper mid-range. You get the stand with it. There is no US release yet, but keep an eye out for it. Just because we got to talk about AI a little bit more, worth noting that this is the first Motorola smartphone with their AI photo enhancement engine, which has optimizations for things like motion capture and color segmentation. So again, even your mid-range phones are not going to be shipping without AI these days. So there you go. And it does come in some lovely colorways of black and lavender. And there's also a limited edition Moonlight Pearl. So yeah, we'll have to see what it finally is named and looks like when it comes to the US. But there you go. Rumors are no longer rumors. They're a real phone with, you know, not a bad design.
One thing I find funny about this is that Okay, so this is like a mid-range, but a premium mid-range.
Premium upper mid-range.
And we're back to the curved display. Like the display, like whiplash of like what is premium, what is desired, what is not desired. It's so all over the map at this point, because we started with flat displays, and then once the curvies started happening, then it was like, oh, the premium phones must have the curvies because you don't get those on the other phones. That's too expensive for the other phones. And then now we're kind of like on the opposite side, where the premium devices are getting the flat displays because no one actually wants the curvies. And now the curvies are coming to the mid-range premiums. They're just all over the place. They're just like, okay, fine. We'll bring it over here now. We'll see how these people like it.
Yeah. And Motorola's curved screen on the Edge series is something else, because it's curved steep on all four sides.
Oh boy.
If you look at it from like a top corner angle, it just looks freaky. I did not like that last year with the Edge Plus.
So the top and the bottom, that's how the line came about. Same?
Yeah, I don't like it at all.
Oh wow.
I mean, it's staying true to its name, like the original Motorola Edge. It was called the Edge because it was their first like super waterfall curve display on a phone.
Well, there you go. I guess you got to lean into it at this point.
I like that now that the edge. I'm sorry, I'm being old. It's like, part of me is like, but it has no edges. That's the point. But they call it the Edge. I'm sorry, I'm just being old and on 3 hours of sleep. But yes, I don't know. Yeah, curved screens. Motorola Edge 50 Pro.
There you go.
Possibly the Edge Plus in the U.S. We'll wait and see. So
we will just have to wait and see, and we will, because that's what we do here. Okay. And then now it's already time to start talking about the Galaxy S25, apparently. And actually, Ben, we have started into the long string of articles that you have written in the past day or two. So tell us a little bit about this. This is a report that says the Samsung is sticking with the Exynos and Qualcomm strategy, which is what we saw with the S24 after the S23 was like all Qualcomm. Is this a significant difference? What does this mean?
So yeah, this is a report out of Korea. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt, of course, but it is that the S25 will again use a mix of Exynos and Snapdragon. So it'll be the same as what we have now with the S24, most likely. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting just because a couple of years ago, Samsung had been talking about, you know, we're going to make this our own chip that's unique to Samsung phones, which Exynos kind of already is, but yeah, they were saying it was going to be something else. But now it seems like that's probably not happening. It's weird.
On the timetable or at all?
It seems like not at all, because it hasn't been talked about for a long time.
Okay. Interesting.
And who knows? It may have just been them covering fire, because back at the time when they had announced that, or when they were talking about that, it was during that whole, I think it was like GOS or something, that thing where they were like throttling games.
Yeah.
It was back during that time, so who knows what's going to happen, but at the very least, it seems like the original timetable of this happening next year is probably not going to happen. And to be honest, it's probably not going to happen at all, because why would it?
All right. So there's not much more to see then, potentially, from there. I mean, yeah. I mean, for the longest time, the Samsungs were a different processor in the US versus overseas. And then there was that small reprieve, like what you were talking about. And then it just kind of came back again. I guess the question that I have is like, what if they were doing their own processor, how would that actually be different from something like the Exynos? You know, would that be kind of, you know, akin to, you know, Google's Tensor hardware and kind of the like focus or customization that they've done with their hardware around like the AI functions happening on the device? Is that something similar to what Samsung would be doing if they were to do their own chip or something? And I don't even know how that differs from what the Exynos chip might be doing on these devices. So
actually, quick question. I didn't read the original report. I only saw like the summary that you guys wrote, and I don't recall right now, a little tired, but did they say if the Ultra will also use Exynos in some regions because the S24 Ultra right now uses Snapdragon globally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it didn't say it's, it basically said the strategy is not going to change next year. Basically, it's just going to be the same thing. So more presumably, yes, it'll just be Snapdragon always in the Ultra, which is probably the best strategy for them PR wise.
Interesting stuff. All right. We have, we've got some like themes running through our app section this week. So Wynn, you've got the first one. Take
we
it away.
Do. And we really did enjoy talking about Beeper. I think at least it was very exciting.
Beeper had its place.
Beeper had its place.
It had its spotlight.
It was there was Sturm und Drang and all kinds of stuff going on. There's like, we got Congress people involved. Well, this is not quite as spicy as that news, but it is pretty big news for Beeper. And so Beeper has been acquired by Automattic. Automattic being the company behind WordPress and behind Perennial.
WordPress.com,
sorry. And yep. Perennial podcatcher favorite, Pocket Casts. That was a lot of P's. I did not mean for there to be so many P's in that. But yeah, so Automattic has acquired Beeper. It's kind of to go along with that as well. If you have been trying to use Beeper, you know, their kind of like, you know, unified messaging client, you know that there was a wait list and it's been a pretty long one. And you had to get like an invite and things like that. Well, now with this acquisition, Beeper has dropped its wait list and it will be free to use following the acquisition. There was kind of like a period where, you know, Beeper did have a subscription at some point during the kind of spicy period. But no, it will remain free to use. And Automattic has basically said they're going to be, you know, kind of leaving them to do their thing, more or less. And yeah, you can go ahead and download Beeper either on one of many clients, Android, iOS, desktop, and sign up for an account today. I did right before the show. I did not get a chance to set it up yet, but there you go. Eric Mijakovsky, former CEO of Beeper, is now Automattic head of messaging. It does seem like Automattic is now positioning Beeper as their kind of messaging app. And they had another app before, or they had another app in their stable before. I thought I saw that, but I did not write it down in my notes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Text.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sounds like, another interesting acquisition for Automattic. So is this how do you guys feel about this? Is a good move for them? Both the kind of freeing of Beeper, both from a wait list and both of, you know, kind of like, a fee to use. And what do you mean? Like, do you have good hopes or high hopes for, you know, Automattic and Beeper as a partnership?
Personally, yeah, I couldn't think of a better partnership for them, especially with the text.com context, because text.com, which seems like nobody really knew about, did kind of the same thing. Yeah, it does the exact same thing as Beeper. But now they're just going to merge together in time. And
text.com, just text.com. God, it's so weird that I've never heard of this before.
So back when the whole nothing chats situation was going on, they're among the ones who were digging in and finding all these security vulnerabilities. So that was the first time a lot of people figured out who they were. But yeah, it's an app that does pretty much the same thing as Beeper, but theirs was not as well known. Yeah, it'll be nice to put them together, and it will probably give Beeper quite a boost in terms of development speed now, because text.com already had a pretty sizable team.
I think this acquisition is really interesting in like how forward thinking, or like it's a bit of a big gamble, to be honest. But they're really forward thinking, like they're seeing the regulatory landscape and what's happening to Apple in the EU and the US potentially, and basically seeing that right now, consumers use a whole bunch of different messaging apps spread out across the world. They're basically seeing a future where there are still a lot of different messaging apps, but they're being forced to be interoperable with one another. And they're seeing a future where instead of a brand or a consumer just using that individual app, they're going to use Beeper or text.com as a super messaging app that encompasses all these messaging apps so that you can communicate with multiple different users on all these different platforms without having to, you know, as a business, 30 different social media managers for 30 different platforms, messaging, like, you know, business communication managers, you could just have like one super app to manage all these different platforms and communicate to your users that way and like automate your messages to all these different users. So like, you know, you have like iMessage business chat or whatever they call it. You have RCS business chat. You have WhatsApp business chat. You know, like instead of having all these three different platforms, you could have it all in one super app, which will now be called Beeper from Automattic.
Mm-hmm. So you can automatically send one message to a lot of platforms. Okay, I'm sorry, I had to do it. I kind of bypassed the one client to rule them all. Actually, on the note of security as well, and we talked a lot about this kind of like in the whole like Apple iMessage like Sturm und Drang. I think one thing that Beeper, I was a fan of their approach and the things that Eric had to say about like the various things that came up, is that security is kind of like, you know, paramount to them, and they were very transparent about, even though, you know, Apple wanted to argue about the security of their iMessage solution. It is important to them, security. And something to note is that there will be no more cloud bridges for syncing messages between apps and Beeper. All of the syncing that will, you know, basically whatever service you're using it for, WhatsApp, Signal, et cetera, all of that syncing will be on device as opposed to kind of going out to some cloud bridge. So more secure and more private, not letting your data get into the hands of other people, just letting it stay on device. So again, kind of going along with, I think, their messaging in the last few months, and good to see that as well. So I don't feel bad at all about putting it on my devices. See where it goes.
Well, speaking of privacy and security tied to iMessage and Android, this is the second movement of this theme. Sunbird, which tried the whole iMessage on Android thing in 2022, in tandem with the Nothing phone, Nothing Chats, is back with a relaunch of its worldwide domination plan. You might recall, maybe at this point, that the original Nothing Chats had a pretty big security issue. Ben, you wrote about this. Tell us about what's different now with what they're offering. Does it address these, or are they even talking about it? I'm curious.
Yeah, so Sunbird's original issue was basically just leaking everything that users put into it in real time, which was terrifying.
How do you recover from that? I don't know. But
I cannot believe they're even trying, to be honest. But they came back, they put out a press release and blog posts and all this stuff talking about how they've, you know, spent the past several months updating the app and changing all these things. And so, yeah, they claim that now their new architecture is not going to put anything in. It's not going to be stored for more than like 2 days on their systems. It won't be sitting in Firebase as it was previously. They're claiming that they fixed it, basically. I do not have the security knowledge to know if they actually did. And we won't know for a while because it's still in closed beta, which is just they're sending invites to an undisclosed number of people every once in a while, starting late last week. Who's to say? We won't know until they fix it, until they, you know, get it in more people's hands. Because we didn't know that they had all these problems for over 2 years because they didn't let anyone have it. The only reason we found out is because Nothing partnered with them and Nothing Chats was available publicly. Mm-hmm. And then it was found within a day.
That was such a mess. I mean, that was so damn unfortunate for
that
Nothing.
That was an insane 4 days.
Yeah.
But
unfortunate for Nothing, know. But you know what? Nothing, like, you probably should have done your due diligence a little bit better than this, right? Like,
yeah,
be sure the partnerships you're making are, you know, they're bulletproof. And this obviously was not.
Yeah, and the thing that I had noticed, which in the press release, which just kind of was like not really a red flag, but just funny, is that they talked about how, you know, like one of the new things that they've done is they have a formal advisor to like help with these kinds of things. And he was a director of engineering at Google on Gmail, but he is not anymore. They listed him as, yes, he works at Google, and they were like all proud of that fact, but he left Google like last month, and they just didn't bother to check that before their press release went out.
Oh dear.
So I don't trust it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
So besides the security concerns, given their, you know, their prior experience with launching this app, like now that we've seen what happens when Beeper has launched their iMessage, you know, support, and then Apple went really hard at killing it, and they successfully killed it. Like Beeper has given up on supporting iMessage for now. Like besides security concerns with Sunbird, like who knows, who's going to say that Apple isn't going to go after them just as hard, if not harder.
Mm-hmm.
And they have only, a lot less. Yeah, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say the only reason that this one might survive for a while is because it's just based on Macs. Just like all the other ones, it's just cloud Macs that you sync into.
Right.
So that Apple doesn't seem to care about that, at least because like Blue Bubbles and stuff is still running.
If you're on their hardware, they don't mind.
Kind of surprising to me that they don't care about that. Yeah. But yeah, maybe
just a matter of attracting the eye of Sauron on, you know, this little effort.
Yeah.
Once they publicly launch.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, nonetheless. And then finally, one more theme to encompass.
One more theme. Wait, it's always AI. AI these days, at least the last year and for the foreseeable future, it'll always be AI. So, you know, we're very familiar, you know, with Magic Eraser as it exists on Google and the Pixel phones. And of course, Google is, you know, in part lending some of their, you know, Magic Eraser particularly. I meant more like in the amorphous Magic. And of course, Samsung has its own kind of like, you know, suite now of Galaxy AI because everybody has to have AI now. Well, it seems like a new player has entered the chat in terms of rolling out their own AI tools. And Ben, you wrote a little something about this new kind of like player in the AI space. I mean, I presume they've been doing AI for now, but the kind of
scrappy
branded
upstart.
The branded like, hey, we got AI toys too. Who is that? Who's coming out with a new AI toy, Bryn?
Yeah, so OnePlus is rolling out AI Eraser, which is basically just Magic Eraser from the Pixel.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, highlight things and delete it and it'll fill in the gap. It seems fine, but it's nothing super new. But yeah, so that's available now on OnePlus 12, 12R, Open 11, and one of the recent Nord phones.
Is it as full-featured as like Magic Eraser is now, or is it, I don't mean to pick on them, but is it less? Like literally, does it have less features or?
I haven't used it yet, but it seems like it's like the old Magic Eraser, like the one that launched on I think that launched on the 7.
Yeah.
It's not Magic Editor, the one that's like full AI where it like will fill in gaps when you move objects and stuff. It's just, it will delete stuff.
So just the generative fill part. Okay. Well, I mean, speaking of Magic Editor, actually, there is a little bit of something interesting going on in terms of the availability of Magic Editor, which currently is a Google One subscription only type feature. But Google is kind of taking Magic Editor kind of freemium and doing they're going to make Magic Editor free to use with a big asterisk, and that is with metered saves. So basically, more or less, every month you're going to get a quota of Magic edits. And like photos that you can use Magic Editor on. Once you have reached that quota, you won't be able to do any more until your quota refreshes every month. So basically everyone, you know, will get, you know, some amount of Magic edits to use. If you do have Google One, then basically that metered save, that quota goes away and you can use it all you want, unlimited. So that's kind of like, you know, the sell there for Google One. And yeah, so rather than just making an exclusive feature, it's now a fairly free, but not 100% free feature to use. Was this a good move on their part to make it more freemium to kind of lessen that Pixel exclusivity? Question?
You know, a little bit of a taste.
A little
you want more.
Oh, God. Yeah. It always comes out you know, drug dealers.
But you know what? Google's not alone in this. Like this is a big part of how AI services are monetizing, is that they give a little bit of that free stuff at the beginning, at the beginning of every month. And it's like, okay, you get 10 credits this month. So yeah, sure, you can use this. to an extent for free. And then if you want more than that, and then at that point, you know, the hope, of course, being that as a user, you start to kind of come up with ways and reasons beyond curiosity that motivate you to then pony up and pay, you know, for the full suite. So to that end, I guess I'm not that surprised to see this.
This is all speculative, by the way. This was just coming from an APK teardown from seeing, you know, those little text bits that kind of just hint at metered saves. So my apologies. But basically, yeah, this is a bit speculative. But, I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? As Jason just said. So we'll see, you know, how it actually shapes up and what the, you know, like marketing and press release and actual release date for this feature is. But yeah, I don't know. Usually when you all tear into APKs and find some text in there, there's a reason that text is in there. It's not like us devs are just like, you know, just like spitballing things that are going to be good to put in the app. They're there for a reason. So we'll have to keep an eye out on that. And for if... probably, and when it does show up. So
there we go.
There you go.
All right. Going to round things out with a little feedback from our amazing fans, listeners, viewers, all of you. contact@androidfaithful.com is the email address. Anyone can send us an email and leave us a question, leave us a comment. If you got it like a short, pretty short mini review of something, send us some feedback and we'll possibly read it on the show, like I'm about to right now when I pull up the email on the video version. It looks like Owen from Ottawa, Canada wrote in to say, I was listening to your most recent episode and your discussion around open Chrome tabs reminded me of how little I clean up my Chrome on Android. I generally keep my tabs I generally keep my tabs on desktop super clean, but my approach on Android is more that in general, my open tabs get cleared when I get a new phone. I've been using my Pixel 7 since a couple months after launch, and as of today, I have 619 tabs open. Not sure if this is a record for the show, but if anyone has more open tabs than that right now, then we should probably seek professional help. Been loving the new show. Keep up the great work, Owen, Ottawa, Canada. There we go. 619 tabs. I mean, I kind of like that idea. Like, just let them roll, let them ride. And then when you put that baby to bed, you know, when you're done with that phone, what is the number? You know, find a place on the wall where you can write it up there. And then over time, you've got your Hall of Fame.
I mean, I think I like Google wouldn't actually display how many tabs it closed if they didn't want us to celebrate, or what's the opposite of celebrate? horrified, stupefied by the tabs. So hey, I agree. Roll it. Let's just see how your phone and your little
just
brain
see how it goes.
Or big brain, like, whatever size your brain is. My bad. Oh God, it's been a long day.
It's okay. You only have a few emails to read, Wen.
I do, but I do have one email from Haim from Crown Heights, Brooklyn. So Haim from Crown Heights, Brooklyn here. Does Android's earthquake detection work? After the quake this past week in the tri-state area, I was scrolling through my settings and noticed it. Then I realized I didn't get any notifications from it. So did it work? And Haim... Ron, before he went before he took off for the evening, he specifically left us his own experience with the earthquake detection, being a member of the tri-state area. From Ron, this is from Ron. I was sitting at my desk in New York and felt the 4.8 magnitude earthquake that was localized in New Jersey. I did not get an earthquake detection notification for that or any of the aftershocks.
Oh.
I scrolled back in my notification history to confirm and nothing at all. I can't do a Ron impression, so I'm not even going to try. Sorry. So, Ron says, I guess it doesn't work. Chaim, Ron, that's
a bummer.
That's a bummer. That's two bad data points. I guess if you were in the tri-state area and you did get a notification, please let us know, but not looking so good.
What was the magnitude of that earthquake?
4.8, which is not nothing.
So it looks like the threshold, I'm just reading on the Google's website, talks about it. It says the threshold is, it works for earthquakes of magnitude 4.5 or greater. So I guess it should have worked.
It should have worked.
But maybe there was a lot of users who were just in like who like their accelerometer just didn't get enough like shaking data to register as an earthquake. Maybe it was just like really close to that threshold and it just did not register.
And as a network, is this the kind of thing that should just work anywhere in the US, or is, are there like
it works
spots?
It says in California, Washington, and Oregon, they partner with their shake alert system to distribute their alerts. But outside of those states, they use crowdsourced data from all smartphones with running Android with their accelerometers and vibration data that's constantly being collected.
Yeah. At the end of the day, these are smartphones. They're not like regulated earthquake detection systems. So, you know, I guess my only word of caution is if you're relying upon this thing to work 100% of the time, I think it's understandable that it doesn't, because it's just, you know, these are like creative ways to detect earthquakes on a device that has nothing to do with detecting earthquakes. It's amazing that they can do it when they can. I have experienced an earthquake here in the Bay Area and had it work, just as my own kind of experience to share there. So, you know, sometimes it does work and sometimes it doesn't. And I'm sorry.
I think the fact that it didn't work for this magnitude 4.8 earthquake, that the only concern is a plastic lawn chair falling over, should not really concern you that much. But like, if it didn't work for a higher, like a 7.0, then that would be really concerning.
And it's like, okay, what the heck is going on here? That should have been unavoidable. Yeah. Like,
not to minimize this,
recognize.
But as a dev, I don't know. I mean, I don't even understand. Like, if you ask me, hey, Wynn, like write a test or figure out how to test this, I'd be that no idea. Especially as you said, like in an area where, you know, we don't really expect earthquakes, like the East Coast Atlantic. I would have no idea. You kind of just do your best guess. And unfortunately, sometimes real life is a lot different than your tests. That goes for small things and apparently for big things as well. That's not anyway an insult to the people that work on this. It's just, you never know
so what actually happens. In order to test this, do they have at Google, do they have a small city that, you know, that they've built with homes and phones, and it all sits on like a ground that can shake to certain varied degrees, and they shake the homes? I'm just thinking, like, how do you even test this? I mean, obviously it's not that.
I'm sure there's some Tom Scott video that goes over how people test earthquakes, and they probably use whatever facility was mentioned in that video.
Right.
I don't actually know if it's Tom Scott video on that, but he probably did one, knowing, you know, that YouTuber.
Yeah, but I mean, as you said, Mishoff, it's like if it's crowdsourced and it's looking for a threshold, then that is really hard to test, because that's when you're getting into like thousands and thousands of users, and you can sort of, you could sort of emulate that, but then emulations are not the same as real life. So that's always like the kind of thing with testing, is that you kind of test the best you can, but certain things like this, crowdsourcing, you know, earthquake detection for a wide area,
For tens of thousands of people.
I mean, if you're in a place like, I don't know, that you get earthquakes often, I suppose there's maybe a way to test it, or maybe, like, as you said, more scientific labs that have much more sophisticated emulations or diagnostics. But that would be a fun challenge. Oh, that would be a really good interview question. No, that'd be a terrible interview question.
We do have a comment from on Twitch from Ambassador Domo, who says that they live in New Jersey, and that even though the earthquake notification is turned on, when they actually go to settings, it says that earthquake notification isn't available or supported in this region. So that's interesting.
It says the same down here in North Carolina.
Whatever it says in
interesting.
Colorado.
Okay. So Google's website says, like, in other regions, it should, like, outside of these U.S. states, we use a crowdsourced approach to detect earthquakes. So it kind of sounds like it should be enabled, but maybe it's just not enabled unless there's like already like a state provided solution.
So I'm looking at that too. It says it doesn't say the United States in the list of countries where it works. It only says in California, Oregon, and Washington. So it must be that it just doesn't work in the U.S. unless you're in those states.
Yeah. Huh.
I wonder if it's because of the less concentration of Android phones in the U.S. compared to the rest of the world.
Good question.
I'd be surprised if there wasn't enough devices for it to still work.
Yeah, like what would be the number that would make this effective? You know, that's another question. course,
they've got that. Do we have any seismologists among the Android faithful? If there are, write in and tell us which of our suppositions and how much stupid shit are we, stuff are we saying, and how many things are we kind of vaguely right or interesting on? Write us and let us know. Contact at androidfaithful.com.
Yes, there's some seismologist out there with his
just
head
like, in, just, in his you guys, like, you just
oh
don't
my
get
God, it. This oh is my embarrassing. God,
this is terrible. Get some angry emails next week. Looking forward to it.
Okay. We'll read them. We'll take the heat.
We will.
And finally, we got an email from Jacob, who sent in this this email and this photo saying, "Hi, crew. Some time ago, you've asked how people watch your show. I do it if I can on my projector and Fire Stick." So projected in large format on the wall. He says, "Love the jazz. Love the jazz." Okay. Thank you, Jacob, for sending in this photo of how you enjoy the show. And it's, you know, maybe we're like life size at that point. So that's cool. Love to hear it. Thank you, everybody, for writing, for sending us your feedback and your insights. Contact at androidfaithful.com if you want to participate. Thank you to Ben Schoen from 9 to 5 Google for being with us tonight. Always a great time hanging out with you, Ben. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was great hanging out with you guys.
Yeah, what do you want to leave people with? Where should what should people look forward to from you? Another 20 articles every single day? Because you are a busy guy.
Well, yeah, you can see me on 9to5google.com. I'm also on Twitter and Threads and everything else at NexusBen. And hopefully I'll be on our podcast soon. We just relaunched it recently. Pixelated is our new podcast. You can see Adder and Damien on that.
Yeah, right on. Excellent. I'll have to check that out. Cool. Well, congrats on the podcast launch, and thanks for being here tonight. And, yeah, it's good to see you. Michelle, I honestly thought you were a tired guy. You were going to bounce earlier, but you decided to stay with us for the full show, and we're very happy to have you for the full show. So that's awesome. What do you want to leave people with?
Yeah, I'm barely hanging in there. And if you want to, catch my work when I'm more well rested, you can follow me on Twitter/X. Threads, Mastodon, Reddit, etc. at Michelle Roman. And, you know, I'll be posting a lot more about Android 15, especially as we enter the beta period, which should be happening sometime this month. I have a lot of things in the pipeline ready to go and still need to be drafted and still need to be discovered because there's still so much left to talk about when it comes to new Android OS releases. So if you want to support my work, you can go to patreon.com/Michelle Roman, join my Discord community where I tease some of the things that I'm working on, and also just chat with a lot of people. Like, there's various things we talk about all the time because I just don't have time to write articles and chat with everyone who comments on the posts that I make, and also like share my thoughts on various things going on in the Android world. So join the community and also support Android Faithful too, because that also ends up supporting me because I love doing the show and I would love to see it continue for as long as we can.
Absolutely. And we shall. Michelle, thank you, Michelle. Great to see you, and get some sleep after we disconnect here tonight. Same to you, Wynn, because I know you're super tired on 3 hours of sleep. What do you want to leave people with?
I want people to know that I completely mispronounced Ben's name when I introduced him on the show, and I am so sorry, Ben. I should have just made sure before I opened my mouth. So I just want to let people know that I am very fallible, and I'm so sorry, Ben Schoen. Did I get it right that time?
Yes, you are good. I don't think anyone has ever gotten it right on the first try. So you're good.
Very kind. So that's what I want people to know. I'm very fallible, but I'm going to get Ben Schoen's name right this time and every subsequent time. And otherwise, you can find me at randomlytyping.com, where I am an Android developer. I do talks occasionally on Android and Kotlin. You can find my talks, associated video, and code there. And I am on the internets, but mostly Instagram at QueenCodeMonkey. So tadaima, I'm really glad to be back. That means
it's great to have you back, Wynn.
Japanese. And there goes my chair again. My chair just likes to buckle under me.
Okay, well, I hope your chair stays together for at least the next 2 minutes. You know, maybe if it's going to buckle, it happens during the outro music.
It'll look like I'm just dancing super hard.
Yeah, it'll be part of the bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Wynn. Good to have you back. As for me, you can just go to yellowgoldstudios.com. And, you know, I've got a couple of things I'm working on right now. Speaking of the S24 Ultra, I've got a review. And then I've got a kind of a deeper look into Galaxy AI, the feature set on the S24 Ultra. And now on the S23 and a few other Samsung devices. So that is coming soon. My dog is about to play with a squeaky toy, so apologies for that. And also, I just want to mention real quick, go to my Substack, which is, it's a free Substack with jasonhowell.substack.com. I'm going to be posting some pretty cool updates here in the next week or so, week and a half. So, you know, go there, subscribe. It's free. It's just kind of like a place where I stream all the information around what I'm doing on a weekly basis, changes to the business, as it were. It's all there. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening to this episode of Android Faithful. We could not do it without all of you and all of your participation. AndroidFaithful.com, of course, is the website that you can go to subscribe to the podcast. And then, of course, like we've mentioned a few times, Patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. If you want to support us directly, you just go there and you become a patron and you get a lot of bonus perks like ad-free episodes and the ability to vote on our stories and so much more. We can't thank you enough. Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you next time on Android Faithful. Bye. Have a good night.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.